for the Pacifica Radio Network to receive daily news stories from the non-governmental forum in Wairo, in defiance of a Chinese ban on reporters there. The workaround was to visit the email demonstration facility that the Chinese had given a permit and attach audio files to emails. You've been listening to the newscast of WINGS, the Women's International News Gathering Service. This edition was produced by Frieda Worden with Virginia Calvino, Eliza Graney, Lisa Hayes, Hope Lafferty, Mary O'Grady, Lara Saponara, Carol Stahl, and Sarah Wise. Travel support for WINGS staff attending the Fourth World Conference on Women and the NGO Forum was provided by the Foundation for a Compassionate Society. You can hear more about the Global Women's Conferences in WINGS' weekly current affairs series. Call your local station for times and days these programs will air. Women around the world are still pursuing the goals that were raised at the UN World Conference on Women in 1995. For more about these issues and how they're being addressed, check your local community radio station for times they broadcast WINGS' weekly programs. You can email wings@wings.org for more information. WINGS thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be viewed on the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The WINGS sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud fall membership drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
I don't even know.
Portland Pollies, this is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance on KBOO-FM, the show of, by, and for people in polyamorous relationships or desiring a polyamorous relationship. So I'm here today pretty much by myself, although I do have my primary partner, Ken Dahl, who you've all heard about in the past and who's been on here in the past.
He's here
in the studio with me. You can call in and ask either one of us questions about our relationship. Our third, who is formerly known as Stanley, but who we revealed his true identity a couple shows ago, is Stuart. Stuart is at home today, but probably listening. Stuart, call in if you like. 503-231-8187. Ken Dahl and I are primaries, and Stuart is probably the secondary for each of us. And it's working out well. We definitely have our bumps in the road.
And we hit a big one a few weeks ago. But it worked itself out, and we're sailing along smoothly now, which I'm happy to report.
Me too. So I'm going to begin with some of the ethicist columns, which I typically do on this show. And they are ethical dilemmas regarding relationships, typically. This first one is of interest to me. And the title is, My Relative Isn't Trans or Non-Binary, but Wants to Use They, Them Pronouns. So the writer writes that, I am a supporter of trans rights and refer to trans or non-binary persons by their preferred pronoun. Recently, however, a family member stated that everyone must use the pronoun they with her, even though she does not identify as trans or non-binary. When I asked her why, she said she chose to use they in solidarity with her trans and non-binary person friends. I'm having trouble with this issue because it seems to require that I and everyone else join her in her particular form of activism rather than a request that I respect her identity. If I'm reading and thinking at the same time, so I'm going to jump to the ethicist's response to this person. Rather than your relative evidently identifies as transgender and is motivated simply in allyship, meaning being an ally to the trans and non-binary community. So I think that's an important thing to focus on, because I will say I myself occasionally go to a meeting, a meditation, something like that, where we're all asked to use our preferred pronoun. And I too, like this person in the story, often will use he, they as my pronoun in solidarity with my trans and non-binary friends in the room. So that's my take, and you're welcome to call in and let me know what your take is. 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance. This is KBOO-FM 90.7 on your dial, and I'm Dr. Tony Zimbardi. Let me go on to another ethical dilemma. My partner and I have had several significant relationships before we met. We're both in therapy and have learned a lot from that, so we're very comfortable processing past relationships together. One of my partner's past relationships soured quickly, which led to years of resentment and frustration before it finally ended. When he processes past arguments with his ex, he sometimes says, she picked a fight. But then he tells me the story. I quietly find that I'm often on her side. I find it odd that he, with all of his otherwise tremendous self-awareness, cannot move past what seems to me like a somewhat skewed take on someone else's valid frustrations. I love him, I always will be on his team, but I feel oddly guilty as a woman for not speaking up in defense of his ex in those moments. She sounds generally immature, but that doesn't mean that she was always wrong. It also makes me wonder if he will lovingly and supportingly challenge me in terms of understanding his arguments or see it as picking a fight. Is it my place to witness or to beat to bite the tongue and simply listen, knowing that all perspectives are inherently skewed and limited? The ethicist responds that you are the classic unreliable narrator who effectively testifies against himself, providing the listener with the evidence that is eventually used against him. And you wonder about his future as well as his contested past, if his blinkered gaze will come to rest on you. So first, let's ask you why you haven't already shared your perspective. I'm guessing that you held back your feel because your partner will feel unsupported and maybe even betrayed when you take his ex's side. For one thing, it's hard to tell whether someone was picking a fight. You weren't there to assess the emotional atmosphere or the tone in which the remarks are made. I mean, context is everything. And unless you're there to witness what this story is about, you're not going to get an accurate picture of what the context really was, of what was going on in the story. What do you think, Kendall?
I'm on the horns of dilemma on that one. I don't know what to think, to be honest with you.
Oh, sure. Hi, I have a caller. This is Dr. Tony. Are you there, caller?
I was hoping to call in, and I actually had a couple of thoughts about that last article you were reading.
Sure.
We've talked before. I've called in the show a couple of times, and I actually honestly have a lot of empathy for the person who is writing this in terms of their partner. It seems like their partner had a big sort of blind spot, and I, coming from someone who has had to do quite a lot of growing, especially in the past 6 months to a year, stuff like that can happen all the time. Mm. You know, I, not to get too far into it, but essentially I've spent a lot of my life thinking that I was very special in a lot of ways, and that there was a lot of ways in which I didn't have to grow up, and that caused a lot of tension and some very, very tenuous circumstances with my primary partner and with another partner I had who I've since broken up with. But we're still friends, but it really came into clear focus in the past couple of months.
What's your name?
My name is Miles.
Oh, hi, Miles. Hi. Yeah.
Hi there.
So, it sounds like you have a lot of insight and that you've learned from some of your past relationship issues.
I would like to think so. Mm-hmm. It's been not easy, and my primary partner put it in a way that it took me a long time to understand. I saw it as very cynical, but I now understand it to be a little more forgiving. Mm-hmm. He says consistently, people don't change unless they have to.
He's right.
and at the time, I took that to mean, you know, people will, you have to force people to change. People don't want to get better. You know, those sorts of things.
My personal motto, Miles, has always been, mm-hmm. when my back is against the wall, there's only one direction I can go in, which is forward. You know, so
that's a really good motto. Actually, I really mm-hmm. enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I see where this person is coming from, and I think, you know, and in a lot of ways, confronting it first and foremost is the best way towards understanding between one another, rather than letting something simmer or fester, however you want to put it.
I'm curious, have you ever been in the writer's shoes? I mean, in a relationship where you're hearing about your partner's ex and thinking, maybe I'm taking that other person's side here. Have you ever been in that situation? Or has it ever been turned on you?
Yeah, it is. It's rare that I have been in the writer's shoes. And this comes from numerous reasons, but you know, I'm the younger one in our relationship and basically all of my relationships. I don't believe I've dated anyone younger than myself.
How old are you, Miles?
I'm 25.
Mm-hmm. And what are your partner's ages?
My primary partner is 28, mm-hmm. going on 29.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my partners... I believe my most recent partner that I just broke up with was 33.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people with quite a bit of life experience, people who have been, you know, doing the adult thing out on their own longer than I have, so I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. So it's oftentimes I will take their side in situations. And mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. was part of, at least, you know, my with my primary partner, part of our issues was that would happen a lot.
No.
He would get a little frustrated sometimes because, to an extent, I would always take his side. And he saw that as a bit of putting him on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
And not treating him as just another person, another friend, mm-hmm. a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been a lot of my work. I've been working on pushing that sort of mindset away and treating everything a lot more simply, a lot more equal in a relationship.
Well, I really like listening to you talk about your relationships, and I will say my own personal theory about men in general is mm-hmm. that we don't really start to mature until around age 33. My theory is that men become ripe between 33 and 38. So the mid-30s is a really mm-hmm. transformative period for men, in my mind, that they go mm-hmm. from being the boy to being the man. It's a maturation yeah. period for men, most men. I think it happens for women in their late 20s, and I think those are probably good. If people are going to pick a primary partner, maybe someone they consider marrying, I think for women, late 20s is a really good age, and for men, mid-30s sometimes is, I think, where we should wait before we make that sort of big commitment in a relationship. So you said he's 33 at the moment?
Another partner of mine was 33. My primary partner is 28.
Mm-hmm.
So we're fairly close. Him and myself, we started dating basically just out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my last year of high school, and he had graduated. We were doing a long distance thing. It's a very long story, but essentially we became friends in high school. He moved away to go to college, and we reconnected years later.
I love that story. That's great.
it's very romantic. Everyone I tell the story to.
It sure is. And then when did the other partner come into the picture?
So my metamors. He came in, he is also 28, and him and my primary partner started dating, 4 years ago now?
Mm-hmm. So, have you told me in the past that one of them is disabled?
Correct. My primary partner is disabled. We've been working through state and federal disability programs and various things to try and get us some assistance. It has been a good portion of our time and energy have gone towards that over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years.
May I be so bold as to ask what the disability is?
It is a mix of things, but generally, that's part of the problem right now is getting a diagnosis. But at the very least, there are he has a couple of mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
And that he. All I'll say is that he has had hallucinations and things like that have come up, and he has quite a bit of joint pain. So he has difficulty standing for long periods of time. We've gotten help with a wheelchair and other mobility aids that have made things a lot easier, but it's still been a lot of learning on all of our parts. Please, go ahead.
I will tell you, a couple years ago, I got a little mobility scooter, and it changed my life, Miles. It gave me freedom that I never knew I had, because I had stopped driving when I had a stroke about 10 years ago, because I lost the use of my left side and also some of the vision in my left eye, so I didn't want to be on the road and put myself or anybody else at danger. And and that little scooter, I can ride onto the Max, onto the streetcar.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
buses too, but you're a little paranoid about buses.
Oh yeah, buses. I don't care because they want to. They call it securing you. They sort of strap you down in your little device.
Mm.
So I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of buses very much.
But you do when you have to.
Yes. So.
We'll look into that. It'll be probably one of the big things when we I think I've spoken before, we're looking to move into the Tualatin area across the river. We're currently in Washington. And I'm hoping to, funnily enough, at that point, volunteer at KABU. I'm hoping to, once I have a little bit more free time and my commute doesn't eat up so many hours, I'm hoping to volunteer at the station and things in the future, hopefully in the winter and the new year.
Very cool. I look forward to meeting you one day. I hope it happens.
As do I. With that, okay. I think I've got to get back to said work day. Thank you very much for your time. It's lovely to talk to both of you.
You too, Miles. Thanks for calling in.
Well, he brought up the age issue, and being the senior member of our own little thruple, I would like to mention to any senior listeners out there that I am 82 and getting very close to 83. Well, my primary partner, Dr. Zimbardi here, is 65. So there's an 18-year difference. And
there's a 19-year difference with Stuart.
So I'm often pointed, it's been often pointed out to me, I'm often asked, why someone my age doesn't date other men my age? And I say, well, the dating pool of 82 and 83-year-olds is not very big.
No.
Most men my age are dead.
Yes.
So what do I do? If I were to encounter another 82 or 83-year-old who is in good health, reasonably fit and attractive, but I don't find very many men like that, so I date men who are 18 years younger. And it works. I mean, I have a very happy relationship with Tony and with Stuart. And
it works for me.
Good. Glad to hear that, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say out to your other listeners out there who might be in their 80s, romance is possible at that age. You might not find it with another person your age, although you might. You very well might.
Seems to be true regardless of sexual orientation. People over 50, certainly over 55, I think have a much harder time finding mates. Part of it is the change in energy level, physical stamina, the change in physical appearance. I mean, 10 years ago before my stroke, I had a smoking bod. I was a gym rat. And I was 55 with a 29-inch waist and a 42-inch chest, and I went to work out every day. I played tennis once a week, and it gets harder.
Yeah, I
harder.
See in the picture, Tony. You were a bona fide hottie.
Yes, I was. And, well, all things in life we are forced to eventually let go of, and that's just part of the process of life and the process of aging. Time, health issues, they all change us, and they change our ability to attract a partner. It's very different being past the age of 55. It's very different being disabled and being single and trying to date. I was fortunate enough to meet both Kendall and Stuart. So if any of you have any questions for any of us here, please call in 503-231-8187. We're KABU FM 90.7 on your dial. And speaking of KABU FM, KBOO, we exist only because of your donations. So please keep the donations coming in. We appreciate that. We would not be here without your support. And of course, with what's going on in the White House, the executive branch right now, we're always at risk of losing funding. Things are being just slashed everywhere. I think most of you probably know what's been happening with NPR and PBS, and it's not pretty, folks. So again, please donate if you are able to. We exist only because of your support, and we thank you for that. So I'm going to get back to my ethicist questions here. This next one is, I'm a woman in my 30s with a persistently low libido. No medications or stress to blame. I can orgasm alone, but rarely with partners, and I don't experience spontaneous desire. Although I have a sex drive, it seemed to be much less of a force for me than for others. I've been with my partner most of my adult life. I haven't climaxed with him in over a year and a half, despite good communication about sex. His libido is also low, though higher than mine. When we do have sex, I generally enjoy the intimacy and the pleasure I'm able to give, but it sometimes feels like a chore without a payoff. He also laments that he can't get me off. We're an excellent couple 90% of our life together. It's just that sex simply isn't important to me. Whatever conventional wisdom says, is it ethical to continue this relationship? I enjoy giving my partner sexual pleasure, and I'm not denying him that joy. Doesn't he deserve to have a woman who drools over him in all ways? Or would leaving for his sake be false martyrdom, considering that I don't see anything changing for me with someone new? And the ethicist responds, first, your partner is an adult with agency, not a Victorian maiden you're corrupting with your lust, or rather, failing to corrupt with your insufficient lust. He knows the score. He's choosing to stay. You say that 90% of your life together as a couple is excellent. That's not a relationship problem. That's a relationship. So relationships are fraught with conflict. Freud said that all relationships are basically power struggles. And I believe that to be true. He also talked about the repetition compulsion, which is we create our childhood relationships typically with our parents or adult figures in our own adult lives, this time hoping to get it right. So we pick people with similar qualities quite often to mom or dad or somebody who was an influential figure in our life when we were younger, and then we recreate those relationships. And again, we struggle, that's where the power struggle comes in. We struggle with trying to find our own place in those relationships, given our past history with our family members. So I'm curious, I'm getting a little Freudian here. Let's give a call in if you're curious. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO FM 90.7. Portland. And I'm looking here through these dilemmas to read to you folks. Should I come clean about my old sexual and financial betrayals? Two of my past indiscretions have me wondering what I should do about sharing them with my spouse and/or pastor. Many years ago, my wife had a one-night stand with a male friend of ours. She admitted it to me a couple of months later because she couldn't deal with the guilt, explaining that she regretted it the minute the actual act began and resisted his pleas for additional encounters. I'm a pretty understanding guy. Oh, okay. Well, I'll come back to this. I've got a call. Caller, go ahead.
I just heard your last statement by Freud, and I could agree, but could we differentiate? Have you ever heard the difference between power with and power over? A woman named Starhawk wrote this. I can't remember the names of her books, but so when you work with somebody, you know, I mean, employee, employer, how many good bosses have you had? I've had a couple, I don't think, but 10, and then I work for myself mostly, but you know, those that really share power, in other words, share knowledge. They don't act like it's gold to be bestowed, you know, at points.
Can I share with you something? The highest compliment I feel I ever got from someone I was supervising, she said to me, I respect you as my supervisor because You never ask me to do anything that you couldn't do yourself.
Or won't, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I got you. Well, I had a boss about this, and this is like the biggest man I knew, and he was missing a leg, and I won't go into the reason. It was medical malfeasance, and that's why he started this organic health food store, not organic produce market in Flushing, Queens, New York. Okay,
I love it.
Back in the 70s, yeah, and there was only like one in Manhattan at the time. But anyway, one time I had worked for him like 2 weeks, right? And it was, at the time, it was so 4 1/4 an hour, right? And he comes up and he goes, okay, your hours are what, 46 hours times 475, is it? You know, with a wink. And I'm like, uh-huh, sure, Barry, you get, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. You get, instead of saying, oh, you've done so great, and I think you're great, I'm going to give you a raise, see? I had already given him my worth, and he was simply recognizing that I had earned it.
Before we get too far into this, can you tell me your name?
Yeah, well, my name is Wade, but I use tangent because I don't like being classified as white. You can call me Caucasian. Or, I don't like white and black and such, so.
Mm-hmm.
Left so, and right, okay, who says they're right?
Would you please go back to where you started, which I really was curious about, the difference between...
Well, the power, you said, Freud said all relationships are based on power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at my relationship with my wife is 38 years. We're divorced. We were married 22, mm-hmm. separated about a year. Back in the Depression, the fall of 08, you know, things went weird. But we really loved each other, and when we got rid of the drapery of marriage, you know, thinking that the marriage itself would somehow make us go 50 years, okay? Then, so we've been living together for these last, 16, I suppose.
And this is post-divorce you've been living together?
Living together, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you feel it any different being divorced and still being with your ex-spouse than when you were married? Is there a difference, or does it feel the same?
Only in that, and we have fights still. I mean, it's different. But the thing is that... I am not, and I think she's, I think, look, the easiest license in the world to get is a marriage license. All you need is a name, address, and at the time for me it was about $100, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a driver's license, you'd have to have some instruction, any contractors, any kind of, you know, professional license, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the state to start telling people, how to, you know, love each other, but if they can't even get along. But if you get what I'm saying, there would be some time. But so it's a big, it's something like a myth, I'm saying. There's a lot like what people think about America, if you let me extrapolate a little bit. I'm not going to go off on that tangent. I'm simply saying that the marriage, because we had said, I do, we did. They don't say in unison, we do. Why is it, I do, okay. Isn't that still separation, just in the word from the beginning? Yeah, that's the thought.
Well, I don't want to get into the whole marriage ritual, but...
I'm not depending on the marriage.
Can you go back to power with versus power over?
Yeah, so if somebody... look, in other words, whenever I hired people, I paid people $10 an hour. When the minimum wage was $7, because I had done this work, I had run a chipper, I had a brush chipper, or had dug, you know, holes for trees, or what it was. I know it's hard work, and I respect that. I had people tell me, other people tell me, friends of mine, they say, oh, you're spoiling them. No, I'm not. I'm treating them as a semi-equal, you know.
We're
equal, okay, simply that. But the thing is, one, is that there's people that will share knowledge givingly and openly, and there's others that will want to either, if they do give it, the first they're going to use their ego and first explain, my brother-in-law, how very important it is and, like, how much knowledge he has. It's going to be like 15 minutes to a half hour of what a big deal it is. And then you might get some, you know, you will. But, you see, I just want to... and show you how easy it is. I can, you know, show you how to trim your tree. It's not, but I'm an arborist. I'm not. But I want to share. I'm a lover of trees, and I want to share. There's one of my polyamorous relationships. We were on this before about polysexual, polyamorous. But yeah, I have many loves, but they're one sexual. So there's that.
I'm curious. You're living with your ex-wife, and what are your romantic lives, sexual lives like currently?
Okay, so I was thinking about this earlier. I didn't know if I'd go there, but right now, so she has had this extended menopause and so itching and such that makes it difficult, and so we do other different, another wrinkle every night or something. Okay, what I'm trying to say now is that to your gentleman's friend that's 80 some, and I won't say old, I'd say of age or of experience, that so my libido has dropped off, and I hear these commercials about low testosterone and low T, you know, and so I really don't care basically that much about sex, that as much really. It's and I don't miss it really. I kind of wonder what all the big to do was, but hey, that's what those not raging, but engaging hormones were all about
for us dudes.
And it was fun. I'm not suggesting it.
But every year past 40, our testosterone level drops more and more. I always recommend any man over the age of 40 talk to their doctor about supplemental testosterone replacement. So I'm curious, how old are you, and how old is your ex-wife?
I'm of age. I don't say old. I'm 68, about to turn 69.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to share a funny thing, because it's not exactly, unless you want to get back into that, that's fine, that's okay, but I'm not trying to divert the situation, but just as an aside, a joke against the supposed benefits of abstinence, okay, because this is an idea that comes from Eastern tradition about, I think you've heard about it, if a man does not have sex for a number of years, and we don't know exactly how many, but it could take, then this energy rises through your spine and creates enlightenment. You've heard this idea, correct?
Yes. I'm about to take a workshop at the end of this month called The Body Electric. It's a workshop for men.
And I'm not laughing at it particularly, simply that I'd heard this idea, and then some people I met from Britain, I guess that's to say it doesn't matter where they're from, except that the accent will help at the end make it more comical, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of explained something as I just did, and I said, yeah, I've heard this idea. And I said, so are you doing this? And his friend goes, well, every once in a while we go in for a bit of debauchery.
You do a pretty good British accent, I'll give you that.
You just ruined it, right?
But, you know, this whole movement I think you're referring to is about withholding ejaculation and how that builds up a certain energy in the male psyche.
So you would have sexual encounter, but without ejaculation, then.
Mm-hmm, yes.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. That's still a far cry from what most of us are used to.
At 65...
I didn't care about missing sex. Are there other benefits of having, they call it free testosterone or excess? Maybe your body just has so much and now it doesn't. Does the fact that I'm a vegetarian have anything to do with that?
Yeah, but I just want to say, for me at 65, you're a little older than I am, and Stuart, who's a little younger than me at 63, and Ken at 82, almost 83,
yeah.
Rarely do orgasms occur in our sexual encounters, but that energy gets stored and held within and built up and comes out in other ways that really enhance our interactions.
Interesting. No, I so like it. I'm so glad I called.
It becomes more about the process and less about the outcome. You know, the journey, not the destination. That
of course, you've always better to travel hopefully than to arrive. Is one expression, but yes, of course everybody wants to get there, but if you're so focused on getting there, you're not really enjoying the wonderful scenery.
Right, right.
I'll inject here, the intimacy of just being together is much more important than the actual orgasmic climax,
uh-huh.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's what I enjoy, is the intimacy, the mm-hmm. closeness.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah, and notice how, like, so in a heterosexual relationship, we were told as young men we had to be more open, and foreplay was, you know, the women need to, like, have, you know, some kind of, and I think a lot of women actually have sex with what they early than they might earlier because they want the closeness. Okay, and then the men at
yes.
that time, I was growing up in the 60s and early 70s, and like of that coming of age, I guess, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There's pressure, you know, like, I could give you one story, just as funny, I hope we can just end on some humor. I worked with my brother, who had been in the Marine Corps, Vietnam, Trelaw, that doesn't matter, but he was working on cars, and I was working on cars with him, but I was about 18 at the time. And so there's a couple other guys around, and he just goes at one point, well, how many women have you had? Wait. And I go, like, none. And he just goes, what? I go, yeah, no, I haven't had sex yet. And he goes, you know, oh, my God, my brother's a virgin. Wait, he's a virgin. Wait. It was like I could hear 1,000 people, like, chanting this out of my past. Right?
Yeah, it's rough being a young man.
I had sex, like, 5 months later, you know, like, and it was mm-hmm. didn't mean anything. It was just a simple thing about word. And I will say this, that there was a gentleman, a friend of his from high school, a friend of my brother's, who waited a little mm-hmm. bit till all the cacophony died down, and they walked up to me and very gently said, that's okay, man, that's okay.
Wade, so. It's being suggested to me that we wrap up for now.
Sure.
But please call in again. I appreciate your call, and I enjoy talking with you.
I will do, and even though we have differences of sexual preferences, you're super open and honest, and you share your knowledge with not a big ego PhD trip on it. Thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you, Wade. I appreciate you. Take care.
It's time to remind the listeners about KBOO Out Loud. Send in your contribution. KBOO needs it.
Well, thank you, Kendall. I'm sure KBOO appreciates you. You're an unofficial supporter here on the air. Let's see, here's this next one. I've always wondered if my husband is bisexual. Is it okay to ask him?
Sure.
Let's see, my husband and I married in 92. We were both around 30 at the time, and each of us has had previous sexual partners of the opposite gender. Although his heterosexuality was questioned in his discernment process for ordination. Oh, okay, so she married someone who became a priest. He's always been adamant that he is not gay. He and I engaged in sexual intercourse for 7 years, not often and not pleasant for me. And then around 25 years ago, he said he would spare me any further requests for sex. And we've done nothing more than snuggle and cuddle since then. This has been fine with me, as I never really enjoyed sex for a number of years, and I've wondered if he's bisexual and if what we have is a lavender marriage. How might I broach the subject after all these years? And the ethicist responds to her by saying, for more than 2 decades, you have managed to maintain a marriage in which sex and even conversations about sex have mostly faded into the background. In this way, you reached an unspoken agreement. Sex simply isn't central to your relationship, and you have accepted that and that agreement. So given all this, it's worth asking what, if anything, either of you would gain by revisiting all these questions about his sexuality at this point in life. Learning he was bisexual would explain a lack of sexual interest in you. It would leave you more or less where you started. As for the lavender marriage thing, a relationship entered into knowingly or not to provide cover for one's partner one that gradually and mutually settled into a companionship in which sex is lost is also losing its importance for the two of you. Well, it's lost. A University of Michigan study, which sex is lost its importance for couples in a marriage, reflects couples like yourself. So that's pretty much what the ethicist has to say about that. Keen, Kendall.
What do you like? How's that?
Curious about this woman and her husband who may or may not be bisexual. I feel like at this point, who cares?
My guess is that he is.
Oh, yeah? What makes you say that?
Men are men.
Uh-huh.
And men have their needs, as the old expression goes.
Yeah, but that's a cliche that sort of gets men off the hook.
There's also, if you say, if you're experienced just being hetero your whole life, and whether there's like a background interest in being bi or bicurious, if you want that title, you may or may not want to actually put it in practice, but you also might want to try, you know, see if you really do connect with it. But unfortunately, in this case, it sounds like he's really timid. And so, unfortunately, his wife is like, he can't move on. So we can't, like, establish whether it's a lavender relationship or not.
And what difference does it make, even if he is bi?
If he's giving her what she wants,
right,
a companionship marriage, what difference does it make where he's getting his sexual satisfaction, or even if he is?
Or he may not be. I mean, he may be an asexual kind of guy.
Yeah, he might be. But not many men are.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as getting a sexual outlet, it's a lot easier to do it with a man than a woman. With women, you have to wine them and dine them and do a lot of coaxing and say what they want to hear just to get a little whiff.
Okay, but, well, now you're getting back into stereotypes.
Yes, I am. But the reason that the stereotypes exist is that they're mostly true.
Well, I think you're right about that. Yeah, most are.
But with men, just mention the word sex and he'll start opening his pants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he's getting, maybe he is having casual encounters with gentlemen for his sexual needs. That would be my take.
Well, thing is, it's not affecting the marriage. Their marriage is a marriage based on companionship.
Their marriage is based on companionship at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's giving that to her?
Yeah, if they're both satisfied with that unspoken agreement. Yeah.
Yeah, like does it build or does it not build?
Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of static to me.
Yeah, then no worries.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly. No.
It's working for them for now. And that's all any of us have is now. And is the situation working for now? I'm curious to hear your thoughts, listeners. I'm at 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance on KBOO FM. I'm Dr. Tony Zimbardi, a retired psychologist from Los Angeles. Happily retired here in Portland now. Again, call in if you're curious about discussing some of these thoughts. 503-231-8187. I never got to finish. I started to read about the guy who was wanting to come clean about his old sexual and financial betrayals. So this was a guy who had cheated on his wife in his younger years. And then he had embezzled a little money from his boss, from the company, and was writing into the ethicist to ask, should he confess? And basically the ethicist says, you say that your wife was unfaithful once in the past because you were neglecting her. That was her side of the story. And told you about it. Your response was to pay her back. You felt she owed you one. So you were unfaithful three times. And then separately from all this, you embezzled some money from your company. The ethicist says no good could really come from confessing your long ago infidelity to your wife now. And your long ago whether we're in discussions with the company funds. It's not clear what you would gain by confessing to your pastor. Protestant religions typically don't do confessions and penance and all those sort of things. So, again, leave it alone. When things from the past pop up, and maybe you're curious about your significant other's past history, whether it be sexual or financial, it's in the past. Leave it there. All we have is the present. Whether we're talking finances or whether we're talking romances. So all we have is the present. Here's another one. I've always wondered if my husband is bisexual. Is it okay to ask him? Okay, you know, I'm going to skip this for now because I have a call. Caller, go ahead. Are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
Yes. Tell me your name.
I'm Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. What's up?
I just thought that we should look at the name of your lovely show, Dr. Z, mm-hmm. Radical Romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to mention the subject of the hopeless romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have called your show before, and I mm-hmm. deeply admire what you do.
Thank you.
And as an asexual person, I believe it can be one could be a hopeless romantic, if you will.
Did you say asexual?
I did.
Okay. Okay, so you're a hopeless romantic who is asexual. So what does that mean for you? How does that play out in your now, your day-to-day life?
Well, my romance is with art, with beauty, with poetry, with philosophy, and with the human condition generally, relatively romantic with that, because most humans, in fact, have proven themselves to be on the verge of violence against each other almost at every turn. So I don't bank on or put investment in a personal relationship with another person per se. I have a lot of relationships that are friendships, and many of them are very deep. And the romance of it is the appreciation and of art and beauty, mm-hmm. of philosophy and poetry.
So are some of your friendships romantic friendships? Is that what you're saying?
It's a kind of romance that is absolutely sexless.
Mm-hmm.
And this is related to the previous story you brought from the ethicist about the woman who thought her husband might be bisexual, and yet they were in a comfortable relationship that 90% of the time everything mm-hmm. was fine. Mm-hmm. But that's not too shabby, but as Ken Dahl mentioned, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And romance itself can be radical when it is romantic in an historically artful tradition. The romantic poets, the romantics, the romantic era, mm-hmm. etc.
Mm-hmm.
And radical romance includes, to my mind, the romance of beauty and art and poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. I like it. I like it. Romance, art, and poetry. I'm curious, do you date? Have you had a relationship in the last decade or so?
No.
No. Okay.
Except with art,
mm-hmm.
with beauty,
mm-hmm.
and with poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm going to hang up now, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Jeff. You take care. Okay, everybody. Any thoughts from Keen or Kendall?
I love it. I love how adamant he is about it, and honestly, I've always wanted to meet someone who is dedicated to the, shall we say, the ace lifestyle, ace being short for asexual. I hear that he has a disinterest in most people. That is to say, he looks for, sounds like, specifically those deeply into philosophy and those he has a strong connection with, but less... like much less interest in the bodily interactions thereof.
Yes, the physical body engaging in sexual activity, yes, very little interest in that, but that's fine, to each his own. So we wish Jeff well in life in general. I'd love for him to call back sometime and let us know how it's going and tell us a little bit more about the relationship with romance, art,
and poetry.
And poetry. It sounded lovely, and I did not get a chance to confess to him that I, too, am a hopeless romantic. I'm an addict. I'm addicted to Hallmark romance movies. I tell you, well, they're always starring dashingly handsome men, so of course I have to watch them and record them, and that's my addiction. I just cannot get enough Hallmark romances. Okay. Let's see if I have another ethicist call here.
While you look at your papers, Tony, I'll remind the listeners to KBOO out loud.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yes, send in your contribution. It's contributions that keep this program on the air.
You want to hear more from me? You want to hear more from Kendall? We may get Stuart back in here at some point. We'll see. Please donate. We would not be here. You would not be listening to us and our callers and this program, Radical Romance, for the polyamorous and open relationship set. Keen, why don't you tell us a little bit about how that all happens? Yes, this show in particular happens the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 10 a.m., from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., so we're running very low on time at the moment. Go ahead, Keen.
I just wanted to share with the audience something I found on a website called morethan2.com.
Mm-hmm.
With a subsection poly for secondaries. Just wanted to read a few of these rights for secondaries, Bill of Rights for Secondaries. And there's some talk of whether it's okay to call yourself primary, secondary. Some people really don't like the hierarchy. But it makes it easier to converse about, at least for those who are not in the know. Anyway, one I thought was interesting was, I have the right to know information that impacts my sexual health. This includes information about other sexual partners or high-risk sexual behaviors the primary couple may have engaged in. Now, I absolutely, at the core level, agree with that and have slipped up recently, so that's my little confession on air. My primary and I had conversed about it a lot. Any little question one had, the other would then think about for a good while and talk about. And then I got the information from my secondary. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, great, I have it. And then I didn't give it to her by the time that the secondary relationship went off, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Which naturally is now a reason we need to get couples counseling, because I was not taking all the important details into account or solidly reporting them. So word to the wise.
I'm curious, you can tell me it's none of my business, but what are your thoughts about entering couples counseling? Oftentimes, you know, as a former couples counselor, I found that typically when a couple would come into therapy, one person had one foot halfway out the door. They were sort of looking for the excuse to say, well, I even tried couples counseling, so now I can leave this marriage, or now I can file for a divorce. And sometimes they did. Sometimes that happened.
I would guess that is with some couples.
Yeah.
I don't feel that way this way. I'm willing to do anything to keep this relationship going.
That's really nice to hear. That's a true romantic speaking there, Kim.
Absolutely. Always been one.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Okay. Kendall, any final thoughts from you for today? Because we're about to wrap up.
I'm okay. I can't think of anything I want to say at this point.
Oh, I have a caller, and we only have about 2 minutes left. Caller, go ahead. Are you there? Oh, sorry, we lost our caller. Keen, any final thoughts from you?
Sure. I mean, I could read another one. There's a whole list here, but don't want to bore anybody. Let's see. I have the right to have and express all of my emotions. This is as a secondary, of course, just as a reminder. I have the right to not just be tolerated, but actively wanted by everyone in the primary relationship.
Sure. Oh, King, would you go back and say the name of that website again?
Sure. This one is morethan2.com.
Right. Is it two spelled T-W-O or
correct,
just the number two? T-W-O dot
morethan2.com. T-W-O.com.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Sounds like a good reference and resource for folks.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Hello, I don't even know your name, but I'm hoping all the same. This is more than just a simple.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.